Okay, let's begin. For those of you who noticed that, yes, you can see my new bookcase in the background, which is my old new case, but new configuration just in order to keep me busy so I can continually search for them. And of course, along the way, I've discovered that I have too many books. I know that those who will claim there's no such thing, but that does seem to be the case. In Kedoshim, and this will be pretty obvious, it says, Kedoshim to you, you shall be holy. Now, there is an argument that takes place between, again, there are many times when you find arguments among the Rishonim, is actually earlier sources, earlier people who have discussed it. So really the question is Kedoshim to you, is it a comment on what came, is it a comment on what came prior to this, or is it a comment on what is going to come after this, which means essentially, is Kedoshim to you wrapping up everything prior to this, which is really the approach Rashi seems to take, or is Kedoshim to you is going to be something as more of a comment about what's about to take place, what's going to be there as the following parsha. So in a sense, is Kedoshim to you a comment on wrapping up chapter 18, or is it an introduction to chapter 19? And I'm not even sure that's a great question, because it can easily be both. But really what concerns me today is a commentary of the Sfarno. In my mind, there's no question that I have mentioned the Sfarno before, but what I'll be doing today is trying to spend my time rejecting the Sfarno. So, but those of you who like it don't have to listen to me reject it. You can just accept it. But let's first see what he says, and then we'll decide what we think about it. The Sforno is not found where you would think. It's found back in Perek Aleph. And when I say it's not where you would think, when we read what he says. Here, Perek Aleph, which is all the way back in Parshat Shemini, it says, Zot ha'chaya asher tochlu. These are the animals that you can eat. So let me again pause and make a comment, and then we'll be able to continue. The book of Vayikra is called Torat Kohanim. The book of Vayikra, ostensibly the topic in the book, is things having to do with Kohanim, things having to do with the priests, things having to do with the Mishkan. And in a certain sense, at least as we went through the first 10 chapters, I would have thought it's as much the book about the Mishkan as it is the book about the Kohanim, although, you know, we can certainly debate that point. But that seems to be what the topic is all about. And then we get up to chapter 11 and things change. Because in chapter 11, we are introduced to the laws, an in-depth introduction to the laws of having to do which animals are kosher and which animals are not kosher. This list is going to be repeated again, another point in the Torah, but it's just an interesting place to put it. And again, at face value, this has nothing to do with the Mishkan per se. Yes, it's true that till now we've had a list of which animals we can eat and which animals we can't. Sorry, let me go backwards. That till this point we've had a list of which animals you bring as an offering, not necessarily which ones you don't bring, but which you bring as an offering. And I could have thought, and maybe even I should have thought, that when it comes to God's, with singular, with an apostrophe, when it comes to God's concern about animals and which ones you slaughter, I could have assumed that this was exclusively a Mizbeach concern, which means as I'm reading the Torah till this point, I don't know yet about which animals are kosher and which aren't kosher. And I could have thought that the whole concern about kosher is a concern exclusively regarding what can be placed on the Mizbeach. Again, I have no other knowledge, or perhaps I should, but I don't necessarily have other knowledge till this point about what's good, what's bad, what's, you know, think about how we, there's a, one of the people here is, there's a, says OU Center. So there's OU, the OU would be out of business, you know, no kosher, that's it, gone. We can put a lot of, you know, if you ever want to look at the white supremacists, what they say about kosher, they say it's a kosher tax on your food, right? They don't think it's anything more than some rabbi getting some money for it. It's a kosher tax. I was once on a plane from New York to London, and the stewardess comes over and says, "Did you order the kosher food?" I said, "Yeah." So she like brings it over a couple minutes later, and like she's holding it like at a distance and like making a face like it's disgusting, which it may well have been. And then she says, "Listen, you know, this it really isn't any good. If you want, I can bring you over, you know, regular food. We have plenty." I said, "No, I eat kosher." She goes, "Well, just in case you change your mind, we have plenty of the other food." And I said, "No, I eat kosher." She goes, "Well, if you want, I can bless it." And she starts crossing herself over there. She can bless the food for me, and then it will be kosher also, which was, of course, her assumption is that's what kosher food is. Kosher food is food which somebody blessed, and she thought that's all that was necessary. But no, that's not the case. But I'm going to say it again. As I'm reading through Sefer Vayikra and I get to a section of which animals, yes and no, I could have thought this is only a Mizbeach concern. So having said that, let me now go back and to look at the Sforno that constantly concerns me. Zot chaya she'tochlu. Hine, acher she'netzlu Yisrael et yam haruchani she'kanu b'matan Torah. When the Jews lost their spiritual luster, which they had achieved or acquired at the giving of the Torah, Matan Torah, asher boho yurim l'shrot shechina aleim biltiyam tza'i. At that moment, the divine should have been able to have been upon them without anything in the middle. Now, by the way, that's a great assumption. I don't know why he's making that assumption. It's also interesting that even at Matan Torah, there was an emtsa'i, and the emtsa'i was Moshe Rabbeinu, because it did not come directly to the people, as it were, but rather God speaks to Moshe. People are listening, so there's already a reason why I would not necessarily completely go for what the Sforno has said till this point. Now, that's interesting, but all that that may mean is that there may not necessarily have been the need for a central place of worship, but there could have been a place of worship in many different places, which means does it have to be one place or many places? As a matter of fact, Hamakom Mashir Skir Shmi, what is it going to say there? It doesn't say Bilti Emtsa'i. What it says, Bakom Makom Mashir Skir Shmi, well, we'll see that verse, Li Neder, later on. That's talking about a verse about a Mizbeach. Avoy Lecha Verchticha. I'm going to come and I'll bless you. As it will be in the future. I will put my mishkan within you. Now, again, what does that mean, within you? Does that mean within every single person there will be a mishkan? Or does that mean that within the Jewish community as a whole there will be a mishkan? Now, the Sforno is certainly understanding it as it will be within each individual, because he seems to think that's what it says. V'lo tegal nafshi etchem, ma'asa kelid parach achar kach me'ashot od shchinato b'neihem klal, kamru ki lo ler b'kir b'cha, that after the Jews sinned with the golden calf, there was a thought that there would be no shchina within the people at all, that God's presence would not be in the Jewish people whatsoever. The Jews would be rejected, or since this would be a quid pro quo. The Jews rejected God by making a graven image and serving this golden calf. The response is going to be that God will not be in their midst. Nonetheless, when Moshe prayed, he achieved some kind of a tikkun, or something was fixed. That God's presence will be within them, b'emtzaut mishkan, via a mishkan, a temple, ukelav, and the utensils, misharatav, those who serve in the uzvachav, and that which is brought within it. So again, I want to pause here in the middle, and we will return to this in a moment. There's a well-known argument, which we can call the argument of the Ramban and of Rashi, again, between whether, you know, things are in the proper sequence or not in Sefer Shmot. Those of you who've heard me speak about Shmot have heard me say this many, many times, which means, is the building of the Mishkan in its right proper place, or is it only introduced after the sin of the golden calf? Rashi's of the position, it's only after the sin of the golden calf. Therefore, one can read into Rashi, which I think the Sforno is doing when he is going even further with this approach. He's saying, had there been no sin of the golden calf, there would have been no need for a Mishkan. Now, we don't know how far he's going to go with this, but no need for the Mishkan because God's presence would have been in every single one of us. And when Moshe prays to get some kind of forgiveness after the sin of the golden calf, then what happens? He achieves something and God agrees to build a Mishkan. Which means the Mishkan, according to the Sforno, is absolutely post-sin of golden calf, and it is some kind of a compromise that God has made now with Moshe. Oh, fine, my glory, my Shekhinah will be within the people, but only via this Mishkan. And that seems to be what the Sforno was saying, but it gets worse than that. And then he writes here, Ad shehisigu v'zachu el v'yira kvod Hashem al kol ha'am v'el yiridat esh min ha'shamayim. U'v'chein ra'al etakein. Okay, and therefore till something was accomplished, and then where the fire comes down and the people have some kind of a sense of the divine. U'v'chein ra'al etakein mizugam she'muchan le'or be'or ha'chayim ha'nitzchiyim. God then still wanted to fix that which was broken. Now, again, in his mind, what was broken? Prior to the sin of the golden calf, God's presence would have been in each and every one of us. which means we would have been transformed into something much more than we are. Instead of having a temple in our camp, we would have, each of us had been some kind of a holy being, whatever that means. So now we have a Mishkan, but the human is still negatively impacted. And it's again, letaken mizugam, to fix their nature, as it were, she'emuchan le'or ba'or ha'chayim ha'nisraim, in order to be prepared for eternal life, which would mean the world to come. V'zebetikun ha'mizonot v'atolada. And that is going to be regarding a fixing, a tikkun, or change that will take place, regarding ha'mizonot, that which we eat, v'hatolada, things having to do with giving birth. V'asar et ha'ma'achalim ha'matmi'im et ha'nefesh b'madvat u'b'muskalot kamru v'nitmeitem bam kamru al tishaktsu et nafshotechen. וקמרו ולא תתתמו נפשותיכם בכל אשר אצ כי אני השם המלא אתכם ארץ מצרים להיות לכם אלוקים. Rather, והתקדשתם והייתם קדושים. So he's saying over here, and he's implying and interpreting the word of holiness in the most fascinating way. But first, let's understand what I think he actually said. That had there not been a sin of the golden calf, we would have no such thing of what we call kosher and non-kosher animals. Why? Because we wouldn't have needed it. Why? Because non-kosher animals make your soul tameh, as it were. They cause spiritual confusion. Mitamtem et hanefesh. Non-kosher food makes somebody spiritually confused. But there's only a problem with spiritual confusion when we are susceptible to spiritual confusion. And the Sforno is here claiming that that is only a post-sin of the golden calf situation. Prior to the sin of the golden calf, there wasn't a problem. Therefore, what he's claiming is that the laws were changed as a result of the golden calf. A, we got a Mishkan as a compromise, and B, God gave us a couple of more laws. Now, let's just go look and see how far he takes this. He says there would not have been these laws of kosher and non-kosher, and it's only these things which now make the soul impure. And he writes, v'hitkadashtem v'yitim kadoshim. What does that verse mean? Perush nitzchiim. You will be holy. You will be holy. Sanctify your souls and become holy. What does that mean, holy? Holy means separate. Holy means different. Mitadmim laboreit barachim ki kadosh ani. Now this is a whole different, and now you realize why, you know, reading Parshat Kedoshim about holiness, Kedoshim to you, right, as we saw in the beginning, Kedoshim to you, ki Kedosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. You shall be holy because I'm holy. And he said, okay, what does it mean to be holy? Now forget about what the Ramban said and forget about what Rashi said. The Sforno is reading the idea of Kedoshim to you being prepared or preparedness for the world to come and a time that our souls can be God-like in the sense of relationship to God and exist outside of time. Now, if that seems like a mouthful, I'll read it again. V'yitkadashtem v'yitim kedoshim. You shall make yourselves holy and become holy. Perush, what does holy mean? This is a new interpretation of holy. Nitzchiim. Nitzchiim means forever. Netzach is forever. It means to exist for eternity. And again, I'm just going to say that eternity means, as far as I'm understanding it, in the world to come. Mitadmim lebarei yitbarach. And he's saying, yeah, but that to be able to exist forever, again, humans are limited. But our souls are forever. So therefore, when we eat food, he's saying is that this is soul food, because it's going to allow our souls to be perfected, as it says, ki kadosh ani. So if you, God is eternal, and therefore you want to be eternal, your soul wants to live forever, God gives us this new rule, this new law of eating kosher food. And then he continues, v'asar hanida v'hazava v'hayoledet. And other laws that were introduced then, were all the laws having to do with procreation, which means he seems to be, again, I don't think I'm reading anything into this. L'kadesh et hazera l'taro mikol tumah. He's saying that had there not been a sin of the golden calf, there would be no laws of Nida. There would be no laws of Zavad. There'd be no laws of Yoledet, which means all the menstrual laws and so on would completely disappear. And I'm actually, he says, Hamizonot v'toladah. That was a phrase he uses. V'zeh b'tikun hamizonot v'toladah. That the idea of holiness has to do with what we eat and how we procreate. And had there not been these sins, these things wouldn't be necessary. But rather what happened, we became impure people by sinning with the golden calf, which means now you realize another point, and that is that idolatry makes us spiritually impure. L'kadesh et hazera l'taro mikol tuma. Kamru v'yizartim b'nei yisro mitumatam. V'lo yamutu b'tumatam. B'tam'am et mishkani. So again, you v'yizkir l'shon tuma b'nivlat behema v'chayat mea v'shmon yishratzim. And he essentially saying that any place, any situation that the word tum'ah or tameh is used, this is something which is introduced as a post sin of the golden calf response. Now, I want to start with a very simple question. I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to debate. I mean, let's just take it at face value and let's assume that he's 100% correct. Why is it introduced here? Sin of the golden calf was all the way back in Shemot. Why is he waiting here to introduce this? Right away after the sin of the golden calf, if this is correct, immediately there should have been an introduction to the laws of kosher. Listen, you guys messed up your souls and now you have kosher. So he would claim that, again, if the sworn were here, at least let's utilize what he would say, that, that what was introduced is the Mishkan. And then we get into the whole problem that I already mentioned about Rashi and the Ramban. But the Mishkan is introduced, but it's not just the Mishkan. The Mishkan is this partial success on Moshe's part, but then this idea of the food and this idea of the of kosher sexuality. I don't want to sound like Shmuel Boteach now, for many reasons. But that's what he's saying, is that the idea of kosher sexuality is one which only results because of the sin of the golden calf. And by the way, I personally find this to be so shocking that the Sferno can say this, because essentially he's saying is that a good deal of Jewish life is basically an accident. When I say an accident, it's he wouldn't say an accident. He'd say, no, that's what we needed. But that means that it's not part of God's original plan. And to my mind, this is really, really interesting, which essentially what he's saying is that sin has ramifications, that when we sin, we need more spirituality. By the way, this is the reason why there's so many chumras today, because people are terrible sinners. So people sin, so therefore they need chumras to make themselves feel more religious. But this is what the Ramban... Okay, it's bad enough that we do it. Yes? It's bad enough that we do it. That the Sfarinos claim that God did this. And that essentially, that when people sin, the response of the divine will be, okay, you need more of a tikkun, you need more things to fix, you need more laws. But again, I would not have thought that certain things like this, which are, just so basic to Judaism, are just a result to sin. So now what I want to try to figure out is this true? When I say, is this true? You know, it's hard to judge such a thing in terms of saying, yes, I'm right. But I want to try to just look at the verses and try to see, you know, what emerges when we look at some other verses. To start off, aside from the problem that I raised, why is it not introduced after the sin of the golden calf? The flip side of that problem would be, why is it introduced at the point it's introduced? Again, sorry, let me restate this. We were going through the book of Vayikra, minding our own business. We get all the way through chapter 9, right, Parsha Shemini, and then Yud is where the sin of Nadin Avihu takes place. And right after that, we're introduced then to these laws of kosher animals, non-kosher animals, tazria, mitzora, all kinds of things with tum'ah, going all the way through acharei mot, which then goes back, okay, this is the proper way to serve, which, by the way, seems like a direct response to Nadin Avihu, so much so that it says it, acharei mot shnei b'nei Aharon, right after they die, this is the proper way to serve God in the Mishkan. And then it leads to a whole chapter having to do with sexual relations. Now, again, I don't know how far to take this Sforno, but is the Sforno going to say, because he said toladot, or having children, so is he going to only say that this is a question of laws of tum'ah, per se, or are illicit relationships also called tum'a? Let me just point this out, because again, I told you, I don't want to let him get away with this so much. So in Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Yudchet, which is in Parshat Acharimot, it says as follows, Ve'elisha b'nidat tum'ata lo tukav galot ervata. Now that's something that we need to pay attention to. The law of Nida, again, Nida would be a woman when she menstruates, she has her period. Afterwards, relationships or sexual relations are not allowed until the woman goes to mikvah. It's written actually in two different places in the Torah. It's written within the chapter dealing with Tuma and Tahara, purity and impurity, but if those are the right words to use. But it's also written in terms of the section having to do with forbidden relationships. So if we skip down to source number 4, which was back last week, their nida is introduced in terms of tuma and tara, and that's really, I think, what this foreigner was going on. The word tamei is used in that context, and he's claiming that the whole idea of tamei is only introduced after the sin of the golden calf. Now we need to be more sensitive in terms of things which are now being called tum'a. But my point is, if you look at source number 3 in chapter 18, v'yisha b'ninat tum'ata. So the word tum'a is used in this other section, lo tukrav legalot ervata. So over here it's also used. And he says you also can't sleep with your neighbor's wife in order to defy litam abba. Okay, and it goes on, it goes, which means essentially we have a whole list of things that you're of relationships which are not allowed, and this incidentally is not going to be the only place the list is. It's going to continue in source number, but it's going to continue further on as well. So I just want to hold on a second, which means over here it uses the phrase of tum'ah. So again, I am now going to be completely guilty of putting words in the mouth of the Sforno and saying things that he didn't say. But what I'm questioning him about is here. Look at source number 7. Now I see why I missed it, because I didn't bold it. There we go. Now it's bolded. V'isha sheyikachet eshet achiv nidahi. So if nida is not there, the word nida is used in terms of a brother's spouse, right? So we've seen over here that it's not just a question of what I would call Nida and Zava, but if you look carefully in source number 3, you realize it's talking about other forbidden relationships. Well, Eshet Amitcha, there it says, Litam Abba. Are you going to tell me that the only reason you could not sleep with the spouse of a neighbor or is only because of a post golden calf? You know, trying to do a tikkun? No, I personally do not believe that's the case. And in fact, the Torah tells us something else over here. And again, I'm guilty of putting words in his mouth, but nonetheless, let's just read a little bit further. Uvachol behema, and then now it sums up all the forbidden relations and says, al, let's bold that, titam'u bikol eile, don't cause impurity, or the word tum'ah, by doing all of these things. And that's all the, again, arguably at least all the forbidden relations, because this is the context it's in. No, this is the reason I'm kicking them out, I'm giving you the land. Because if the land becomes defiled, then the land will vomit out the inhabitants. This doesn't say that the reason that we have all of these forbidden things which are called tum'ah is simply because we're doing some kind of a tikkun for our souls because of the sin of the golden calf. This is why God says, I'm giving you the land. All these things were done by the people asher lefnechem, who lived here before, vatitma ha'aretz, and they caused the land to become defiled. Essentially saying the reason I'm giving you the land is because they did these things which aren't tamei. So I find it very hard to argue. Again, let me admit, I put words in his mouth. I put words that I can't see how he can move away from. Because he's saying is that we needed sensitivity in terms of tum'ah in order to fix our souls. And he says the way that things that we eat and the way that we procreate. So is it just the way that we procreate, or is it also the people that we procreate with? Furthermore, he says the problem is the idea of tum'ah. But the word tumah is not only used in the couple of examples that he gave. The word tumah is used in other cases. And I'm going to say it one more time. This approach of his doesn't seem to stand up to critical analysis when we start looking at the terms, how they're used, and where they're used. Let's just go a little bit further. The main reason given to be holy, right? And all of that quote was from Perek Yudchet. And that ends, Ushmartim Ishmotai, right? You should guard yourself doing all of these things, so I don't want you to be fooled. Source number 3, Perek Yudchet, ends Pasuk Lamed. Don't do all the things. Velotit tamu bahem, don't become tamei. The next verse is actually source number 5, which we had before. Vaydeber Hashem Moshelemar, Debel Kol Abarapenizov, Marteleim Kedoshim to you. Which means, what does kadosh mean? The kadosh is opposite of being tamei. Now, before, what did the Sfarno say kadosh means? He says that holiness means that you're going to become nitzchim, you're going to become eternal, in a sense. Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. The list of all the things that you should do because you're kadosh, again, if you follow the things, look at the things which follow this, it includes ishimo vivtiro, have proper respect, reverence for one's parents, but shabtatai tishmoru, that a person should keep the Sabbaths, altifnu elilim, of course, not to worship idolatry, which means all of these things seem to be the things which indicate holiness. By the way, including pasuk lamed vav, which is down the way, lamed hay, lo tasu avel b'mishpat, b'midah b'mashkel v'misorah, Mosnei tzedek of Nei tzedek, make sure that when you do business, you have very fair weights and that you're not stealing things from people. There was a whole bunch of interpersonal laws over here, including arguably the most famous, v'haftarech kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. All of these things were included in the idea of being holy. In source number 6, which sounds pretty much like a conclusion of this, again, it warns against idolatry. V'tkadashtem v'yitim kadoshim. You should, you know, make yourselves holy, become holy. What is being holy? You should follow the statutes which God gives. And we can debate whether chok over here means laws that don't make any sense, and we don't understand the reason for it, or the things which God tells us about. But nonetheless, it seems to be that what is holiness? Holiness is simply following these things, because otherwise we would stand the risk of expulsion. Among the things that we find here is it talks about the Kohen. And I want to use the Kohen because I think it's going to help us understand the other issues. In source number 8, Pasuk Perikav Aleph, the Kohen who's going to be the Kohen Gadol, right, he cannot become Tamei to anyone, Lo Yitama, which is, again, interesting. And it continues, and it says, "V'hu yishav b'tula yikach, almana gushav achala zona etel lo yikach." That means when it comes to the Kohen Gadol, he's more limited in terms of who he can marry, and then it ends up ki ni Hashem mikadsho, because I'm God who makes him holy. So again, I don't know how much I should be picking on the Sforno now, but again, I would say this is not a question of nitzchiyut, of eternity, of living forever with the Kohen Gadol. That's a completely different function or factor involved in this. It's because he's a Kohen. And not just a Kohen, he's a Kohen Gadol. Which means it's interesting. Jews have certain laws in terms of who they can marry, who they can't marry. A Kohen has more laws of who he can marry, who can't marry. A Kohen Gadol has more laws in terms of who he can marry, can't marry. What's the obvious conclusion from this? The obvious conclusion is that a Kohen Gadol has more Kedusha, and therefore more laws. The Kohen has more Kedusha, therefore more laws. But the Jews would seem to have more Kedusha, or expected to live with holiness, and therefore these laws, which means these laws are a reflection of Kedusha, which exists. They're a reflection of holiness, and not just some independent tikkun, as it were, And a matter of fact, I think that we can take this back. Once we realize that there's a Kohen factor, we could take it back and we can look at another verse. And that is back in source number 11. What I skipped in number 10 is there are some other things in terms of... I skipped 9 and 10. 9 talks about the right after Nadan of Yudai in terms of not leaving the temple. It's a verse that we saw last week. And source number 10 speaks again about Lo Techalut Shem Kadshi V'Nechata Ashti B'toch B'nei Yisrael Ani Hashem Mekadishchem. Again, you find this theme over and over again at this point in Vayikra. But over here, it was in terms of which animals you bring as a korban. That's what makes that. That's where the holiness seems to be emerging. But let's go back to source number 11, because I think that this is going to be critical in terms of this entire topic. V'atem tiuli mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. Which means the reason that Jews have certain laws is because they're Kohanim. Now, if you're not following me at all, a Kohen Gadol, I'm going to say it again, has more laws than regular people. Or Kohanim, regular Kohanim, have more laws than regular people. Jews who are by Mount Sinai, and I'm going to just give you a little hint over here, long before the sin of the golden calf, are being told that they are going to be a nation of priests. They are going to be Kohanim. Matter of fact, there's something else which is being told right in the same section. You are going to be a nation of Kohanim and a holy people. And again, just notice, Kohanim, Kadosh. It goes on in Pasuk Yud, Vayomar Shema Moshe, Lech Al-Am, V'kidashtem Ayom Machar. Sorry, v'kivsu simlotam. So you're going to be a goy kadosh, which would be lovely to have a definition of what kadosh means. And over here it says, v'kidashtem ayom machar. You will be making yourselves holy today and tomorrow. V'yunachonim liyom ashli, ki b'yom ashlishi, yirad Hashem leinei kol ha'am al har Sinai. Which, by the way, makes Har Sinai very Mishkan-like. This is the approach of the Ramban. That Har Sinai becomes like a place which is holy, becomes like the Holy of Holies. Only the Kohen Gadol Moshe can go up to the mountain on that day, and they can't even enter it. There are places they can go and they can't go. But in Pasuk Yedalad, Vayered Moshe Menahar La'am, V'yikadesh Et Ha'am. Again, he sanctifies them. V'chabsu simlotam, v'yom ala'am, yunachonim l'shoshet yim, al tikshu elisha. Which means, in terms of getting this extra level of holiness in order to receive the Torah, they were not allowed to be involved in sexual relations at all. Which means, this idea of limited sexuality, and over here, it's in terms of even people who are married and their spouses, seems to be connected on some way with holiness, which means once we understand this as a core principle, we should not be terribly surprised when we find that the Kohen, who has more responsibilities, has more laws, and the Kohen Gadol has more responsibilities, has yet more laws, because there seems to be an absolute correlation between these concepts. Going back to Har Sinai, of course, the limitations and the quote-unquote tum'ah, one of the examples we had in Vayikra, in Parshat, which one was it? I believe it was Parshat Achrimot. Sorry, in Kedoshim, was in terms of a woman, okay, sorry. Let's go back and I'll go and show that example again. In Parsha Kedoshim, v'isha sheikachet eshet achiv nida. So that was interesting, the term of nida. But going back to the one in Perek Yudchet, there in source number 3, it uses the phrase v'el eshet amitcha loten shichvata lazara litam abba. But eshet amitcha is not, even though the word tuma is used there, that's only a response to the sin of the golden calf. Again, I'm putting words in his mouth, but that would be an absurdity, because where do we find that law? We lo tinaf. We find that in Aseret HaDibrot, which is what said to them when they prepared themselves and all of them were holy, become a holy nation, and that's put right over there. I mean, the other thing which is interesting, and now I'm stretching this a little bit, is right after Aseret HaDibrot, and source number 13, Vayomer Shem Moshe, Kol Tumah B'nei Yisrael, Etem Ra'itim, Nishmayim Dibarti Etchem, and so on. So now it gives a list of laws. Now, one of the laws which are listed is Mizbach Adamat Taseli, that you're going to make a Mizbeach for me. Right? V'zavachta lavet olotech v'et shlamecha v'et soncha v'ikorecha b'kol makom asher askir shmei avoy lecha v'rachticha. Now, the Sforno is trying to lead us to believe that before the sin, God was within all of us, but that's not what it says over here. B'kol makom means, b'kol makom here doesn't mean in each and every one of us. Rather, it means that, as it says, that you can build a mizbeach. I mean, it's like he left out half the verse. Mizbeach adamat haseli, v'zavachta alav. Which means it's not just that this was there to fix something and only after Moshe prayed and so on and so forth. This is there before, that you could put a mizbeach in any place, and afterwards the mizbeach becomes limited to one place. I also find it interesting at the end, so here it's talking about the clothing of the Kohen. When he climbs it, there should be modesty. I looked for this, and I found the Al-Sheikh said it, that it says when he climbs the bear, chas rachmana pentagale ervato alav, because the word gilui arayot, gilui erva, is just a real interesting phrase. Kal v'chomer l'magale ervato be'eshet amito. That a person shouldn't, quote-unquote, uncover their nakedness when they climb up the ramp to the Mishkan. Certainly they shouldn't be uncovering their nakedness in terms of someone else's spouse, which is interesting, because, again, as I admit it, sometimes I find things and I'm surprised, wow, that's interesting, like this Sforno. And sometimes I look for things and then I'm very happy when I find them. And I was looking for someone to say this, that the sensitivity of the Mizbeach, that you should have modesty when somebody is serving God, and certainly one should have modesty in terms of keeping a relationship private between people that are married and not to, and essentially not to cheat with somebody else. Just as an obvious, shall we call it, extension of this law. Meaning, and just to be clear about this, Judaism was never meant to be a religion which was only about temple service. It was only about what takes place. Because again, I could have said, I want to go backwards a second, I could have claimed that the only concern that Judaism has in terms of kosher is regarding what you put on the Mizbeach. I could have claimed that the only consideration of who you sleep with and so on is only in terms of the cultic behavior inside the temple and so on, which did take place in other idolatries. That the behavior itself in the temple was one of, again, completely the opposite of holiness in every single way. Over here, what Judaism is actually doing, it's saying something which I think is fascinating. And this is what's said at Har Sinai. You will become a nation of priests. As a nation of priests, you're going to have more laws in terms of Kedusha, which essentially is saying that the laws of Kedusha, of holiness, are not only laws which apply exclusively within the temple, it applies in every single house. It applies in every single kitchen. Every single kitchen has holiness. Every single kitchen needs to be conducted in a way, not just that I'm concerned what goes on the Mizbeach, I'm concerned what goes in the oven, I'm concerned what goes on the plate, I'm concerned what goes on the table, and so on. Because holiness is in every single home, because we're a nation of priests, we're Melechet Kohen and Vegoi Kadosh. It's not just in terms of the cultic behavior that we're going to have all kinds of fertility rites and sexuality will be something of concern within the temple. No. In every single home, there's going to be a concern in terms of sexuality and who you are sleeping with. And we're not going to be a religion that's going to say, listen, the important thing is to placate some angry God and do whatever kind of service needs to be done. And that's where it begins, that's where it ends. Quite the opposite. Is that the holiness over here needs to spill over into the home. And that's actually what God says before we even begin. Before we start the whole thing, that's what God tells Moshe to tell the people, you better prepare yourselves now for holiness, and I'm going to make you a holy people, I'm going to make you a holy nation. It's not going to be that just the Kohen is going to be a Kohen. I mean, I know that sounds funny, and there's all kinds of jokes you can use now in terms of why you want to become a Kohen. We are all Kohenim. That's really what it's saying. We are all Kohenim. That's why these laws exist. But we actually saw something stronger than that. It's not just because we're Kohenim these laws exist. We became Kohenim, these laws exist, because these are the conditions that we can live in the land of Israel. I mean, Yom HaTzmaut was yesterday. I once heard somebody say, it says, we just now saw the verse. We saw the verse a couple of minutes ago, that the land of Israel will vomit out anybody who doesn't belong to be there. Ergo, everybody who lives here is here because they deserve to be here. So all these people who may sometimes upset you, don't let them upset you. They're tzaddikim. How do you know they're tzaddikim? Because the land has accepted them. They live here. They live here, and God has accepted them to be here. Which means the laws that we have are laws of holiness, because those are the rules of engagement in order to be able to live in this land. Not just as this foreigner was saying, oh, listen, you guys blew it. Now we need to have some extra laws in order to fix your neshamas. No. These are laws which already are being introduced back by Har Sinai, and I'll say at least back by Har Sinai, and these are things designed to make us into a holy people, a nation of priests. Let's take a look, and maybe we can take this back a little bit more. In Source 16, what I was looking for, again, this is much further in Vayikra, moving towards the end, the chapter Taitishmo Mikdashaiti Roni Hashem. It just doesn't sound to me that the Mikdash is something which is incidental or accidental when it's being put together within the same context of Shabbat. These things seem to be foundational concepts. In source number 17, it's again going to be a verse which the Sforno quotes in multiple places. V'ratati mishkani b'tochichem, v'lo tegal nafshi etchem, v'hitalachti b'tochichem v'hitilachem l'elokim, v'atem tiuli la'am. Which he understands as somehow in each and every one of us some temple will be built. I just don't think that's what the word means. I mean, again, if you look at 18, he writes, Tishresh shchinati b'tochechem b'kol makom sheteyu, k'mo sheyad kodem ha'egel, ba'amru b'kol makom asher eskir et shmi, avoy lecha. So at least what he's doing is he's rolling back the clock and saying this, you know, what's going to happen is we're going to go back to the way it was originally. Nonetheless, I'm going to insist that the main point over here is God is saying, I will put my Mishkan within you, because the context over here is what's going to happen when we go into exile. And when we come back from exile, God is saying, I'm going to put the Mishkan within you. Not as in terms of changing the rules of engagement, but rather saying, I'm going to make up after you have sinned, exiled, been punished, and then finally come back. There will be an opportunity for us to go back to the way that things were. Essentially, God is saying the relationship can be fixed. But I want to go, as I said, I hinted before, a little bit further back. Right after the flood, we find God speaking to Noah. Now, again, we can claim there's the same phenomenon taking place. After there is sin, new laws are going to be introduced. Although this example, I can actually flip it around and say it the other way around. There's reason to claim, and the Talmud goes in this direction, that man was originally not allowed to eat meat, that all man in the Garden of Eden was vegetarian, and the question is, at which point is meat actually allowed? I mean, that's going to help us in understanding the following verses. By the way, notice that one of the concerns is about Toladah, is about the children that will come out. And here it talks about the interrelationship between man and animals in terms of food. And it says, all these things are being given to you, and you will be allowed to eat them. So as I said, there is reason to believe that till now they were not allowed, now they're allowed to eat it. Korim is a show. Chai lechem yeh la'achla, ki yerek esem natati lechem et kol. This is the first time we find that man is being given permission to eat all kinds of things which are not vegetation. Ach besar benafsho damo lo tochelu. So this is really the source of what we sometimes call Avram and Hachai. That you're allowed to eat all kinds of things, but this you can't eat. So now the question really becomes, is this another law that was just now introduced? Or is this actually, meaning, is this strictness as a tikkun after the sin of the flood? Or is this God is rolling things back a little bit and say, okay, I'm letting you eat more things? Meaning, the idea that you can't eat Avram and Achai is already, I would call that the most basic law of kashrut. The basic law of kashrut is if something's still alive, you can't eat it. You're only allowed to eat it when it's dead. Now, how you eat it when it's dead, so now we can go a little bit further to figure that out. But my point is that, and again, I'm extending the idea of this far now, to say that all the kosher animals are only introduced in Shemini, because now we need, you know, some kinds of limitations and holiness, you can't eat something which is tameh. we actually find the most basic thing, which is tamei, which is the blood or the limb of a living animal, that's introduced very, very early. But if we go back to that section, there may be something else which is of interest. It tells us right afterwards also, shofech dam adam be'adam demoy shafech, that a person who's guilty of murder, then that person has a potential death penalty. But then it gives a reason. Ki b'tzelem lo ki masat adam. Now, we can read this as many times as you like, and you can try to read it differently. But I'll tell you what it says. It gives us a reason why murder is not allowed. And it didn't just say, lo tirtzach, like we have the Ten Commandments, don't murder. It says for a reason. Don't murder because man is created in the image of God. I just want to again go back because I think that this was the earliest strand of what I was trying to hint at before. What my argument was is that man has holiness to them. The ways that we've seen that is in terms of the Kohanim. The Kohanim have higher levels of holiness, and therefore they have more rules in terms of what it is that they can do or who it is they can marry or how they become in contact with certain types of tumah. When we find the laws of kosher and the laws of kosher relationships, my argument is that this is the extension that we're supposed to be holy people. Mamlechet Kohanim b'goy kadosh. What I was trying to get to with that verse is why can't we murder people? Why can't I just say, okay, that person's expendable? Seems to be Cain and Hevel, had that kind of relationship. The Torah gives us a reason that murder is not allowed. Why? Because man is created in the image of God. That's the reason that we can't murder. But that seems to me to be saying that every human being has holiness. That's exactly the point. What does it mean to be in the image of God? It means that we have holiness. So what's interesting to me then is simply reading this section together, what we would call the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, although there's a debate how many Noach actually receives. Well, if we read here, not even carefully, Mitzvah Pruvu, which was mentioned before, we're told now permission is given to eat all kinds of things, but there's a limitation. Don't eat blood. Don't eat Eiver Menachai. Don't murder. Why? Ki B'Tzelem Elokim. It just sounds to me as if that Ki B'Tzelem Elokim goes back on the earlier thing as well. It's as if to say, Ki B'Tzelem Elokim, once I got to that next law that I can't murder because man is the image of God, now I also understand why it is that I can't eat certain things. Why? Because there's a holiness to each and every one of us. Which means this is really, I guess we'll get close to the conclusion. But let me just show you what it is that I was trying to say. The Sforno tells us that the idea of holiness, of Kadoshim Tihyu, is essentially an idea which was only introduced because we messed up, we sinned to the golden calf, and then we have new, then now we have to somehow become engaged with holiness in order to get back to the level, not even as far, but to approximate the level we want beforehand, to get to the level of what he calls eternity, Nitzchiut, to live forever. But we can't live forever, so it's our souls, obviously. So in order to get to this, we need to avoid all kinds of tumah. So now, because we fall on such a low level, we need new laws. And what are the new laws? The new laws include the laws of Nida, the laws of kosher animals, and so on. So as I said, that is such a strange read for me of Judaism by saying that all of these things are essentially accidents. That's what he's putting in, and they're accidents that we need somehow to elevate ourselves. The idea of Kedoshim Tiyu could either mean, like as Rashi is Kedoshim, means stay away from things which are not Kadosh. That's what Kedoshim means. That to be separate. Right? That's really where Rashi says, Prushim to you, to become separate from certain things. The Ramban believes that Kedoshim to you is a general statement in terms of all of religion, that religion has to somehow, it's not enough to do the laws or avoid the sins, we need to do one other thing on top of all of that, and that is to become religious personalities. The Ramban is saying it's not just checklist. You know, you do this, you do this, you do this, you avoid this, you avoid this. You know, you do all the things in column A, you avoid all the things in column B, and suddenly you're a good Jew. The Ramban says, no, you still need to work on this, and you still need to become holy. There's still something which needs to be done. That's really the Ramban's approach. What I've been trying to say is the idea of holiness is because we are a kingdom of priests. To be a priest means that there's holiness. That seems to be exactly what the point is that that the Torah is telling us. And therefore, these laws are not introduced as some kind of mistake or some kind of a fixing, some kind of accident. They are a reflection of who we are. Furthermore, the Torah says, you want to go to the land of Israel, you want to stay in the land of Israel, it's a holy land. You need to achieve holiness. If you don't achieve holiness, then you can't stay in the land. That's what this is about. Going back to the very, dawn of history, and we go back, we look, right after the flood of Noah, we find God introduces laws of kosher at that point. I'm sorry for using the word kosher. It may not be that he introduces laws of kosher, but he introduces what's not kosher. Eating blood from a living animal, eating flesh from a living animal, that's not kosher. That's introduced. And it's interesting that right then it's saying, why? Because man has been Tzelem Elokim, which means this is an inappropriate mix. This doesn't work well. I mean, there are those, the Ramban hints at it, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says it more clearly, that the kosher, trying to explain almost a spiritual type of a dynamic of what Tumah does to our souls, but I'm not even going that far. We are holy, and therefore we can't do these things. We can't go there. There's certain things that can't be done because we're holy, because we need to be holy. We need to be holy because that's what happened when God chose us at Mount Sinai, which means to be chosen people means that we're holy. There's certain laws. We want to be in the chosen land, in the holy land. We need to be holy. It's just as simple as it goes. And if we're not holy, what is it told? What are we told? That we'll be no more deserving than the people who were vomited out of the land. Which means the idea of holiness is, and now I want to pause again and really move towards conclusion, but I want to pause. If we look at Sefer Yikron as a whole book, so it all starts Mishkan-centric, all the offerings, and that takes us to the point of Nadav and Avihu and how the Mishkan was misused. By the point of misused, then we get into what we call Havdalah, separations, distinctions. Distinctions include kosher and non-kosher. That's where it's introduced. Havdalah, Lavdil Bein Kodesh Lachol. We move from there to a whole section of Tamei and Tahara, of things which are separate from the Mishkan. We move into there from types of idolatry and things that you can't do, because these things are Tamei. We move from there into sexual relations that one can't do, because these things are Tamei. We move from there in terms of interpersonal relationships that we need to do to create an elevated society, and that's maybe most interesting, that somehow the middle of Vayikra, it started talking about ethics. Who would have thought that ethics are involved in all this? Didn't we think we're in the middle of ritual? No. Ethics are introduced right there, getting to perhaps the pinnacle, not just don't put a stumbling block in someone. Finally getting to the point of love your neighbor as yourself. What does it have to do with some kind of cultic behavior? No. That's part of being holy. Create an elevated holy society. Put all of these things together. Again, that leads us through Parshat Achrimot and Kedoshim. You put these things together. As we move further, we're going to get to some more laws for Kohanim, especially in Parshat Emor. We're going to get to the Mishkan and the holidays as they'll be celebrated in the land of Israel. Going to Bahar and Bechukotai will be, and this is the charitable society which is going to be created in terms of the land of Israel. And then finally, and if you don't deserve it, I'm kicking you out. Which is the whole book is about holiness, but maybe we made a mistake by thinking it was just about the Mishkan. Maybe we made a mistake by thinking it's just about the Kohanim. Well, if it is about the Kohanim, we didn't make a mistake. We're all Kohanim. That's exactly the issue. And the other thing is that the temple is not just about one building in Jerusalem. It's about every one of our homes. And essentially, those are the laws that we're seeing here, is that how we conduct ourselves, by the way, including business, including, you talked about weights and so on, how we conduct ourselves, what we're doing, what we're eating, who we're sleeping with, all of these things help create a society which is a holy society, which will then make us deserving to be able to live in the land of Israel. So if we're going to stay with the book of Vayikra being a book of Torah Kohanim, all that I've done today is I've claimed that the word Kohen is actually much broader than we imagined before. We are all Kohanim. So the next time someone goes to their rabbi and says, Rabbi, I want to become a Kohen, it's actually much easier than we ever imagined, because we are a nation of Kohanim. That's why we have all of these laws. We are Mamlechet Kohanim, a nation of Kohanim, V'goy Kadosh. Just remembering that phrase will help us understand all of Parshat Achrimot and Kedoshim and what they're doing over here, because they're about creating a nation which is a Mamlech HaKohenim and Goy Kadosh, and therefore a Mamlechet needs a land. And the Shidduch that God made for us was giving us a land which is very, very sensitive and very, very elevated and very, very beautiful, but needs there to be Kiddushah in the relationship, needs there to be holiness in the relationship, because otherwise she can't get along with us. So essentially now we understand what all of this holiness has to do with. As I said, the Sforno will leave with a big question mark. Those of you who want to go back and think that I wasn't fair to the Sforno, I apologize to him. I apologize to everybody. But I do believe that that's what he says. I just find it very difficult to accept. I'm happy to allow anybody to be unmuted if I actually... if I do it right now, it's probably make a great deal of noise, but I will... Yes. Anybody wants to unmute themselves and ask a question or make a comment is free to do so. You don't know how to do it. This is great. A lot of people have been complaining it's so hard to teach like this. I think it's great. You can mute whoever you want. You can kick anybody out, whoever you want. I think this is wonderful. I find it hard to imagine going back to any other kind of teaching afterwards. Anyway, I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom. I wish you all Kedusha. Kedusha in the most elevated and healthy and holy possible way.